Was it something we said?
Are you talking to me?
Do you have a comment to make?
Are you talking to me?
Or a bone to pick with us? Why not send us an email to feedback@midwestpeaceprocess.com or join our forum at forum.midwestpeaceprocess.com, or you can just leave us a comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/midwestpeace, or follow us on Twitter @midwestpeace. So that's how to contact us. Now let's give you something to contact us about. This week, we reserve our .sucks domain before someone else does. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
Process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome now. To episode 33. Today is June 14th, 2012. Happy Flag Day. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And this is Rob.
And this is Nathan.
What? Who's Nathan?
Who let him in here?
Yeah, like, I'm a longtime listener and first-time caller.
Dang.
And I'm just so enthused to be here. You guys are awesome.
Well, thank you, Nathan.
We are.
This guy's obviously very wise.
We'll believe anything you say on the podcast.
So Jerry said that I should say a little bit something about my political leanings,
sure.
Things that might possibly be pertinent to the process.
Sure.
So probably the most important thing to me is I'm a Christian. So I guess you could put a label on it, born again or evangelical. Either of those would do.
Oh, we'll put labels on you.
Yeah, and so my apologies to the host if in the past I don't quite fit. I won't mention which host it is if I didn't quite fit the rigidly formed stereotype of evangelical.
Yeah, that's me.
So anyway, it's for me. It's not just like a cultural identification. It actually affects how I live, and also. I'm what you might call a little L libertarian. And so by little L, I'm distinguishing my beliefs from the affiliation with, you know, the party organization goes by the name of capital L, Libertarian Party.
Right.
So I believe in the non-aggression principle. Thoreau said, that government is best which governs least. And he took that and he concluded, that government is best which governs not at all. So I'd agree with that, and I'd argue that all civil government, as that term is used today, what it means when most people use it today, is evil because it must, by its very existence, violate the non-aggression principle and natural law, you know, through taxation.
Nice.
Oh,
what about a government that governs just poorly? Isn't that okay?
Well,
if it governs
very very little, then you know, like Thoreau said, no, I'm saying I am a proponent of, and I can't remember what the term that Jerry uses on the show. It's voluntary society, anarcho-capitalist society,
stateless.
Yeah. Oh, also, I should say that I personally know. Both Jerry and Rob, I don't know Jeremy. I've never talked to him actually until just a few minutes ago. So Jeremy, don't take it personal if I haven't attacked you in my previous listener comments.
I think you have, so it's fine.
Okay, I haven't picked on you. I don't think as much though. And also, I just wanted to say a couple things about Jerry and Rob for the benefit of the millions of listeners of the process. So
oh boy.
So Jerry, correct me if I'm wrong, probably the biggest difference in our political social outlook is, so listen to you talk about a stateless society. Every once in a while, I'll hear Rob or Jeremy ask, well, wouldn't that be worse or have less of an effect than what we have now? And usually respond, well, maybe. And so I'm screaming at my computer, no. It would be much better under a stateless society system.
Well, yeah. I mean, it depends on what the, you know, what the specific issue or topic is that, you know, if there's some, sure, if there's some example I can point to and say, look, see, this already exists in the free market. It already operates fine. You know, if it's something like that, I can say, yes, it would be much better. If it's something that doesn't exist or hasn't existed, you know, in modern times, let's say, then I have a hard time, you know, going to the wall and saying, oh, yeah, that would definitely be better. I don't know that. So,
yes,
I'm not willing to stick my neck out and, you know, guarantee it. But, you know, in most cases, I'll say, yeah, maybe it would be worse because maybe it would be. But that's not the point. For me, anyway, the point is eliminating the systemic evil that government represents.
And right. Agreed.
If by doing that it introduces other kinds of evil that didn't exist previously, well, so be it.
Right. Yeah. The ends don't necessarily justify the means.
Right.
Sure. So, yeah, I guess where I was going with it is, in a way, I think I've drunk deeply of the Kool-Aid, the stateless society Kool-Aid, and I'm a true believer.
Fair enough.
So Rob.
Oh.
Yeah, you didn't think you were going to get away, did you? No, nah. It's not bad. So even though Rob isn't what I would call like a true liberal, you know, like a stereotypical liberal.
Right.
Not very good at it.
I think the listeners might find it kind of interesting that, in my opinion, he comes across as more of a liberal in like day-to-day interactions with them than he does actually on the show.
Oh, outing!
Good Lord!
Wow!
Oh my God!
Really? Well, see, I you don't come across, you know, that liberal on the show, and perhaps a lot of that is due to, how do I put it, non-committal answers at times.
That's my liberal nature to just waffle around.
Right, to avoid confrontation.
Yeah, I mean, that's,
yes,
that's like premier liberal there, you know. I don't want to hurt anyone, so I won't commit. I don't know. Does it feel good? I don't know.
Yes.
Well, that's all right. I had for my intro.
All right, I'll try to let it fly a little more.
All right, yeah.
Just let it rip.
Let your lefty flag fly.
That's right.
All right. So on this episode, we are going to discuss a couple of, I guess, oddball things. We're going to start by discussing a TED Talk that I came across recently and had the rest of the panel here watch. And I'll include a link in the show notes so that everybody else can watch it too. I found it fascinating, and I can tell from our pre-show discussion that everyone else did not find it as fascinating as I did. But I thought there were some things in there that definitely crossed paths with topics that we've discussed on the show in the past, and so I thought it might be worth dissecting a little bit. Then if we have time, we're going to talk about something that Rob just introduced us all to, which is a commencement speech by David Foster Wallace. And I don't know, Rob, do you want to say anything about that?
Oh, David Foster Wallace. The light I steer my ship by.
Do you have a man crush on him, Rob?
I do. I do indeed. I do indeed. I'm not worthy to unstrap his sandal. That was for you, Nathan.
I think I have not read much of his stuff, but this, what I have read, I have enjoyed.
Yay! I'll tell you, when we get there, I'll tell you, give you a little short bio of the poor guy.
Yeah. Yeah, Rob had me read a passage, several pages from Infinite Jest a while back, and I thought that was pretty interesting. That book is pretty big. So, that, I mean, there's a certain level of commitment there to reading that. It's kind of like reading Atlas Shrugged.
Yes.
Does it have any pictures in it?
So, I'll say right now, Rob, if I ever do get around to reading it, then I'm going to make you read Atlas Shrugged.
I'm down with that. I don't think they're quite on the same literary plane, but if we're going to subject each other to harm, I'll take my lumps.
Okay, so this TED Talk was given by a guy named Jonathan Haidt. I think I'm pronouncing his last name correctly. He's a psychologist, and I'll just read the summary here on the TED website. Psychologist Jonathan Haidt studies the five moral values that form the basis of our political choices, whether we're left, right, or center. In this eye-opening talk, he pinpoints the moral values that liberals and conservatives tend to honor most. He studies how and why we evolved to be moral. By understanding more about our moral roots, his hope is that we can learn to be civil and open-minded.
That's a big hope.
Yeah, and I think he makes a pretty good case in this talk. And you know, he kind of starts off by asking the audience to self-identify themselves as either left, right, or other. You know, and then he goes on to kind of quantify things a little bit more, so it's not quite as a subjective evaluation. It's more based on, you know, data from various studies. And I think maybe the only part of the whole thing that I would question is he makes this case that there are these five five foundations of moral.
Foundations.
He says the first one is harm care, okay, which is basically our natural desire to protect our loved ones from harm and care for them, but also our capacity to harm others. The second is our sense of fairness and reciprocity, and the third foundation is what he calls in-group or loyalty. The fourth foundation is authority or respect, and the fifth is purity or sanctity. And basically what he's saying is that, you know, all of us are born with, you know, we're not blank slates. Our brains are not just completely, you know, empty when we're born. There are certain instincts and urges that we have as humans, and they have their roots in these five foundations. You know, I find interesting, and I think we could probably debate whether or not we agree with them or not, but this is kind of something I've been looking for a long time. You know, as we recently discussed on our three episode series about my principles, you know, those are the foundational principles for me, but you could take it farther, I think, and you know, attribute those principles to something even more atomic, I guess, for lack of a better word. And maybe these five foundational things are those atomic things. I don't know. I haven't really spent enough time thinking about it, but
well, sure, the second foundation, the fairness, relates to I believe one of your principles was equivalent to the non-aggression principle.
Yeah, yeah. The initiation of force is immoral.
Is that fairness or harm or authority?
Yeah,
reciprocity.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to do a one-to-one mapping. I think there are aspects maybe of all five of these rolled up into my principles. I don't know.
Well, I think he's given you a spectrum of five kind of human instincts, and I think you're not doing that with your three principles. You're more axiomatic, given some three kind of principles. I don't care what you are as a human. These are the three things that need to happen. and let the chips fall, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So it's kind of, it's the same, it's hitting the same issue, but from different directions, I guess.
Right.
One, he's talking about human nature. He says he's making the claim that humans all around the world, regardless of culture or language or how cold it is outside, are gonna hit these five instincts in some way.
But okay, so the crux of this talk and the reason why I thought it was applicable to the Midwest peace process here is that he makes the case that the first two principles. The harm care and the fairness reciprocity, those are more important to liberals than they are to conservatives. And you really have to watch the TED Talk to see the graphs that he throws up at one point in the talk, because the graphs are, they start out as graphs of just subjects here in the United States. But then he shows graphs of people from cultures all over the world, and they're virtually identical. So that was the thing I found pretty compelling about the graphs.
It's interesting, but the deltas are not great. I mean, is it a half a point? Is it a quarter a point? It's in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
And when you look at the other three foundations, those are at least a full point different. And on a scale of 1 to 5, that's 20%.
Yeah. What I found interesting was that the overall shape of the graph, and I'll describe it for those who don't have it in front of them. The first two principles in as far as how important they are to a liberal versus a conservative were more or less the same, because the lines just kind of run straight from left to right across the graph. The other three foundations, which were loyalty, respect, and purity, those three were diagonal lines that ran from, the lower left of the graph to the upper right. So they're much less important to a liberal, but much more important to a conservative. And pretty much all five lines meet at the same general area on the right side of the graph. So That was the part I found most interesting, was that there was this, quantifiable disparity between liberals and conservatives and how they, how much emphasis they put on each of these foundations. And that was the thing that I thought we could discuss, whether or not we agree with that, whether we see some truth in that.
Yeah, I think that is a good focus area for this speech, I was not a huge fan of the presenter, but it's this piece of it is interesting. I didn't like it. It seemed like he said conservatives resist change, liberals create change, and therefore liberal is good.
Yeah.
And it was like this line in the sand where this is the foundation of this speech, and this is fact, and now here's data.
Where did you get the part where he said, and so liberal's good?
Yeah, I don't think he came right out and said that.
No, not those exact words.
But I'll
look in that was pretty clear, I thought.
Hmm. Yeah, I didn't get that so much. I thought it was more interesting of what he was mentioning about things about liberals that they don't see about themselves, that they're all about affecting change, but they're pretty sure that change is going to benefit them. Another one is the way conservatives fight back against types of change are the same ways that liberals can be of course equally as sort of caustic about stuff. And I remember there's a little graphic on there. If the conservatives value authority and respect or purity, like if you take one of the high-rated conservative instincts here, whatever we're calling them, these five truths, I guess. You got the purity, sanctity, and they'll hit back with that with the keep your hands off my body or whatever it is, or get the government out of my womb or whatever the issue is, So whereas those are kind of normal kind of rallying cries, we've all seen the bumper stickers, but when you put those bumper stickers against these sorts of tenets that the different sides hold. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Okay, but so...
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Jerry, you talked about what you thought was compelling is that there was a difference. You know, you could see it on the graphs.
Right.
The idea is it's scientific. There's, I don't know what, there's not a lot of bias. Because if I understood it correctly, it's they get this information from the people that they surveyed, and the people self-identify themselves as liberal, moderate, conservative, and then they self-identified, you know, where they fell on the spectrum of each of those five characteristics. So,
yeah, I mean, that's more or less how I interpreted what he said.
So as long as everybody has a relatively agreeable definition of what liberal and what conservative is, you know, conservatives, you know, are more traditional and order and et cetera, and wouldn't you expect to see that correlation because it's people self-identifying both where they fall on the spectrum of liberal or conservative and where they fall on the, you know, severity of each of those five characteristics?
Yeah, except that, you know, I don't know that anybody would voluntarily say that, you know, they don't think that loyalty is important or that, you know, respect is important or...
They probably didn't ask it quite like that, did they? I mean, wasn't there like a dozen questions for each of the criteria? And
I don't know how the study was conducted. I don't know, you know, if it was all just questions on a you know, if it was just a questionnaire or if there was more to it than that. I don't know if they did functional MRIs on them while they were watching movies or, you know, I don't know what they did, but I'm assuming that the data is sound. Maybe it's not. Maybe, you know, if we dig into that a little bit more. So I guess what struck me is just, you know, that they were able to quantify the difference and boil it down to a graph. Like, okay, here's five things, and two of them are important to everybody, but only three of them are important to conservatives.
Right.
That's what struck me about his talk.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, so we've got a fairly broad spectrum here of opinions. What do you guys think? Are, as he described them, are those things important? First one's harm care. I think that one's kind of self-evident. Maybe not. I don't know.
Depends on who you're harming and caring.
Right. Yeah.
You know, because I think the liberal mindset is more that they have a much broader view about harming and caring, you know, all the way out to the whales, those poor whales.
Yeah.
Whales are people too.
That's right.
Let me just play this and see if we can hear this.
So what's on the first draft of The Moral Mind? To find out, my colleague Craig Joseph and I read through the literature on anthropology, on cultural variation and morality, and also on evolutionary psychology, looking for matches. What are the sorts of things that people talk about across disciplines that you find across cultures and even across species? We found five best matches, which we call the five foundations of morality. The first one is harm care. We're all mammals here. We all have a lot of neural and hormonal programming that makes us really bond with others, care for others, feel compassion for others, especially the weak and vulnerable, gives us very strong feelings about those who cause harm. This moral foundation underlies about 70% of the moral statements I've heard here at TED.
Okay, so that's the first one.
Makes my liberal heart go pitter-patter.
The way he's phrased it there, I think it is something that we can obviously all agree on, because, you know, we do feel compassion for other people. We have, you know, we have love for our family, for our friends, and we do have strong feelings about those who cause harm, either to us or to other people. So, you know, there shouldn't be much controversy there. So, okay, here's the second one.
The second foundation is fairness, reciprocity. There's actually ambiguous evidence as to whether you find reciprocity in other animals, but the evidence for people could not be clearer. This Norman Rockwell painting is called The Golden Rule, and we heard about this from Karen Armstrong, of course, as the foundation of so many religions. that second foundation underlies the other 30% of the moral statements I've heard here at TED.
I'm not sure he gave us a lot to go on there, but that's number two.
Hey, you know, I find it interesting. You got the 70% and 30%. Well, there's 100%. And these are the five foundations of morality.
Right.
Are we going to end up with more than 100% after we're done?
Yeah, probably. Okay.
Stop calculating.
Here's the third one.
Third foundation is in-group loyalty. You do find groups in the animal kingdom. You do find cooperative groups, but these groups are always either very small or they're all siblings. It's only among humans that you find very large groups of people who are able to cooperate, join together into groups, but in this case, groups that are united to fight other groups. This probably comes from our long history of tribal living, of tribal psychology. And this tribal psychology is so deeply pleasurable that even when we don't have tribes, we go ahead and make them because it's fun. Sports is to war as pornography is to sex. We get to exercise some ancient drives.
Okay, so the picture he showed there that everybody was laughing at was some fans in the stands of a football game or something with paint on them showing their loyalty to their team.
I totally buy the analogy about sports. No, it's not the point, but
yeah, no, you're right. But
I thought it was interesting the way you characterized that as we find it so pleasurable to join a group. Is it?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And I guess I need to backtrack on my statement earlier when I said that he says, therefore, liberal is good. Yes, it is true. He didn't specifically say that. I think it's the adjectives he used to describe the two that he's... My impression that he's painting a picture with these adjectives to drive a point, and that was what I took away from it. And again, here he characterizes it as finding pleasure in joining a group. Well, that's not necessarily the case.
Okay, I hadn't really thought about that. I mean, when I heard that, I was just thinking that it, you know, it speaks to our nature as a social creature, you know, just naturally join groups because we do find comfort in it or pleasure in it, belonging to a group.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think the sports thing is a classic example. Like why do we care if our sports team, which is really just some kind of private enterprise, like any other kind of private enterprise, you know, I'm not rooting for Tums over there downtown.
Right.
You know, so why, like I feel like I'm part of some kind of group and we're doing battle against other groups and then, you know, it's obviously silly, but that is definitely the instinct. But
people
I think
join brand, you mentioned Tums, but people have their brands, like a brand of beer, for instance. People are very loyal to that to the point of being ridiculous.
Right. Right. I don't know if they root for the beer. No beer.
Beer. I don't know if this loyalty translates into brand loyalty.
Right, which is, but it does translate into sports, which is what I'm kind of talking about. That really the only practical reason to root for a sports team is be the same as a brand, because that's all a sports team is.
Well, yeah, but.
But it's, I mean, as far as an entity, as far as a corporate enterprise, it's just a brand.
Yeah,
but the reason why
you're identifying yourself with a group, and it's
with a group of fans, right?
It's
right.
Or between your group and that other enemy group over there.
Right. Which points to this sort of instinct we have to form into groups and do battle.
Right, but I don't know that it translates to brands because, I mean, you know, you don't see Coke drinkers and Pepsi drinkers out. You know,
right,
rumbling in the streets.
Right. Yeah, I think we're saying the same thing. That it's, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Here's the fourth point.
The fourth foundation is authority respect. Here you see submissive gestures from two members of very closely related species. But authority in humans is not so closely based on power and brutality as it is in other primates. It's based on more voluntary deference and even elements of love at times.
So the pictures he's showing here is... I guess these are maybe Tibetan monks, one bowing to another, and then two chimpanzees, one being submissive to the other.
Interesting. Is that twiddling the knobs on your conservative brains?
Well, this is obviously the one I... just the word authority always kind of makes my antennas go up.
Right.
I think there's this thing called the authority myth that we buy into as a society, as a culture, and we're very susceptible to it as humans. And I guess there's a number of reasons for that, but I don't know that he is talking about that specifically when he uses the term authority here.
But I think one thing liberals like to giggle about the conservative side is the we like to call you guys the brown shirts. Everybody wants to do that. Got to reference the Nazis.
Right.
But just how quickly the Republicans can fall in line and fall behind a plan and a leader. And I think that's what you really got out of when the Iraq War and 9/11 all happened. I think that's why the liberal case of maybe this isn't a good idea was so repulsive to so many conservatives, because you're not part of the team. You're not with us. You're against us, right?
Yeah.
You're not doing what you should be doing. So it wasn't just like, ooh, I hear your point and I hope this goes well. It's like no, you're the mole inside the group that's going to ruin the whole team. And that comes down to that kind of respect for authority, especially in times of danger. Like old Georgie's gonna save the day.
Yeah.
Which brings me, since Nathan's online, I'll fly out some more liberal stuff. Which brings me to think about, remember early, especially early when the wars all started, there was a lot. I felt like there was a lot of patriotism shown, but it wasn't really patriotism for the country. It was almost a way of sticking it against people who doubted the war, I guess, liberals, who are, whatever you want to call them, that side of the country who wasn't so sure. And so that became support our troops, kind of banal little kind of easy phrases. But I think what they meant was
flag waving.
Right.
But yay, flag day.
Yeah, that flag waving wasn't really about the country. It was a way of. Sometimes it was shown, I worry that it was a way for Republicans to show their support for their Republican president over the rising tide of liberal nastiness. And that was what I feared. Well, what's happening now? Like have you guys perceived such a kind of a tampering down of that sort of behavior, even though the wars are still going on? But now we have a Democrat in the office. Like you see a lot less support our troops these days.
You do?
I do.
Quantify that.
A lot.
In what context?
I don't know. Bumper stickers, signs in yards, flags, people being outwardly supportive of the troops. Because during those early years, was that support of the troops wasn't really so much support of the troops. It was support of a conservative mindset. And a conservative president.
I think you're taking too many liberties with this. One thing you're maybe not considering is the timeline. As we get farther away from 9/11, those feelings wane on their own.
Right.
Doesn't matter who's in office.
You're being too reasonable.
Yeah, I have a bad habit of that.
Right. War fatigue.
Yeah.
Right. And there's war fatigue too. But yeah, I mean there are, and the fact that the wars are winding down and maybe those people aren't so happy with the way they're winding down, and so.
Except in Yemen. We're just getting started in Yemen.
Let's get it on.
As a side note, I was walking out of Bread Company last week around lunchtime, and these two older ladies in their 60s were ahead of me. There were two male and a female walking in, they were in uniform. And the ladies said to them, "Thank you for your service." I thought it was interesting that coming from that generation to the younger people who were in the military, I didn't expect to hear that from them.
Yeah.
So I don't know that's not a proof that support is is still strong, but it's, you know, it's not, hasn't gone away.
So why wouldn't you have expected that from, I mean, what did the difference in generations have to do with it?
I'm not sure. I was trying to figure that out myself, and I haven't figured it out yet. I think if they had been two older men, it would have made more sense to me, which maybe says something about my opinion of the differences in men and women in military, which I don't have anything against women being in the military, but I don't know. It just, when I heard her say that, I did a double take.
Okay. I don't have any, you know, anecdotal evidence to add to that. I guess maybe I kind of agree with what Rob said, that you know, the whole support your troops meme, if you will, is less prevalent now than it was maybe 4 years ago. But, you know, I could also see that that's simply a function of fatigue, like Nathan said.
Is it a function of press coverage? You know, now anything that happens in Afghanistan is a footnote. Oh, yeah, a couple troops were killed today.
Yeah, I don't know. That's hard to say.
Yeah, have we been in any wars in the past that have lasted as long as we've been in Afghanistan?
I don't think so.
Vietnam?
Not. Yeah, Vietnam was, well, depending on when you consider the beginning of that.
Sure.
It could be 14 years long, I guess, but.
And a war, because actually we're not at war anyways, right?
Right. Neither was Vietnam.
Right.
We haven't been at war since World War II.
Okay, well, let me play this fifth one here.
The fifth foundation is purity, sanctity. This painting is called The Allegory of Chastity, but purity is not just about suppressing female sexuality. It's about any kind of ideology, any kind of idea that tells you that you can attain virtue by controlling what you do with your body, by controlling what you put into your body. And while the political right may moralize sex much more, the political left is really doing a lot of it with food. Food is becoming extremely moralized nowadays. And a lot of it is ideas about purity, about what you're willing to touch or put into your body.
Okay, well, so...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Well, okay, enjoyed the quote.
Hey, that 70-30% thing, I'm stuck on that. So I see it as two different ways. Either Mr. Haidt is revealing his own biases in saying that the first two of those foundations you can actually make a moral statement about, and the other three you can't. Either that, or possibly he's revealing the bias of the what he perceives as a bias of the folks who talk at TED.
Yeah.
That they only talk about those first two, which happen to be the ones that those who self-identify as liberals score themselves higher in.
Yeah, that's the way I took it. Now, okay. There's some, you know, there's something missing there for us, because we weren't in the audience and we didn't hear all the other talks that had happened just previous to his. And I got the impression he's making reference to things that had happened right there on the stage, you know.
Well, that makes sense, and because at the beginning he gave the, you know, at the beginning of the presentation he asked, you know, how many people self-identify themselves as liberal,
right,
conservative, and libertarian, and the overwhelming majority, from what I saw, appeared to be liberal. And then he also talked about how, I can't remember what you call it, but. You know, you tend to kind of preach to the choir or listen to, you know, what you believe anyway. So,
yeah,
presumably the speakers would be similarly politically bent as the audience.
Yeah.
He started the beginning by telling some story about basically made a claim about openness, which maybe what picked up with Jeremy was that, you know, two guys, the liberal and the conservative, go look at that Michelangelo's David, who's a naked dude and his junk's hanging out, and the liberal is kind of amazed and thinking about the form and the structure of the human body and how it was amazed, and the conservative's like, oh my god, that guy's junk's hanging out, and it was about he was trying to make a point about willingness to explore or expose oneself to new ideas, I guess.
Right.
I think that started it off negatively for me.
Yeah.
Because it was saying, I got the impression that he's saying, well, conservatives are kind of childish. They can't get beyond these grade school things of looking at this dude's junk and snickering and, you know,
well, yes,
feeling ashamed.
I snickered when
I saw his junk.
Yeah. I didn't take it quite that way. I took it as kind of a slap to the face of conservatives, because he's basically saying, you know, you're closed-minded. That only liberals are open-minded.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. That's not true?
No.
He even
says here, closed individuals.
I don't know if that is the way he meant to come across. I hate to think that that was his intent, but that's certainly the way I took it too when you know I was watching this.
To accidentally come across that way in a forum like this, and a guy who has done this kind of research, he's a psychologist, how be very surprising to me if he accidentally came across that way.
Well, yeah, and there were a couple other cues during his speech where, you know, it was almost like it was an inside joke between, you know,
yes,
the liberal on stage and
it seemed
the audience
like
full of liberals that...
Yes. Told you he was a J.O.
Yeah, he was kind of ribbing each other, if you will.
Yeah, I picked up on that too. But, you know, for me, it didn't take anything away from the ideas that he was trying to get across. I don't know that I agree with, you know, that stereotype, though. I think there are plenty of people who are open-minded, regardless of their political affiliation.
Well, according to him, conservatives do not crave novelty, variety, diversity, new ideas, or travel.
That's right.
This...
Rob is actually obligated to agree with that.
Yeah.
I love the fact that in his speech, if anybody wants to go watch it, that he brought up Applebee's.
I love the Applebee's
because I have a long standing total beef with Applebee's.
Oh, which, what did they do?
I think Applebee's. Applebee's, I think, is the devil incarnate in the way that...
Did they not sing Happy Birthday to you once?
Yeah, and they didn't put a little, like, yes, a waffle cone piece on top of my ice cream. No, it's not that. I'm all down with chain restaurants. I understand their function. It's a chain restaurant. I get that. But everyone loves to eat at a chain restaurant. Nothing wrong with that. But the way that they marketed themselves was very insidious. The eating good in your neighborhood with the little like fake brick facade and the crip crap on the wall. You know, it's like you don't really want to go to your neighborhood restaurant. You know, they might not have the jalapeno shooters you want. You know, come over here to this neighborhood restaurant, which has nothing to do with your neighborhood, and we'll get some junk off the local high school and pin it on the wall, and now we have atmosphere. Ah, just can't stand it.
I really don't. I mean, the Applebee's reference.
It's lovely, but it's the way that it's marketed makes me kind of squeamish when I think about it.
I don't know what it is about it, but I never thought about Applebee's, you know, related to conservative and not liberal, but I got a real kick out of that, probably just because I couldn't really put my finger on why is it that there does seem to be some relationship there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never had any great affinity for Applebee's.
Good man.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever drawn connections between specific restaurants or chains of restaurants and, you know, some kind of political
But what he's getting at, I can
Ben and Jerry's.
I could go on this. I mean, what he's getting at is a willingness or an unwillingness to try new things. Because when you go to the Applebee's, the reason why you go to the Applebee's is you know the jalapeno shooters are there.
Right.
You know exactly what you're going to get. That's why you go to a chain restaurant. That's why you go to Walmart. It's because it's always the same, and you know exactly what you're going to get. You're not going to go to the little dive restaurant Korean place in the strip mall because you don't know if you're going to like the bulgogi, you know. And that's
not why I don't go. See, you're like this guy. You're making too many assumptions.
Yeah.
I'm
letting him fly.
But you know, you admit you wouldn't go there, right?
On the contrary, I went to let me interrupt here for a second. I took my niece to dinner and a movie Monday night for her birthday. And she told me, you pick the restaurant. So I specifically avoided Fridays and Applebee's and all the traditional stuff, and they live in South County, and I picked this place called the Concord Grill. It's a little hole in the wall. I mean, it was pretty rough around the edges, but food was good.
Yeah, I've been there.
So, well, does that mean, am I now a liberal? Am I a brethren?
Jeremy, when you listed those restaurants, you identified them as traditional.
That's right.
Right. Traditional in the sense that they're everywhere. I refer to those as, or the concept that America has those everywhere as the United States of Generica. Because anywhere you go, you can get a Fridays, an Applebee's, or a Walmart, or a Target, or whatever.
Right, because people like to know what to expect.
I think that's helpful in some ways because you know that, okay, if I go here, I can still get this thing that I'm going to need. But then you also want the local experience.
Right.
So those things, Rob spoke last week that when Walmart takes over, and I should love that. Well, I don't because I still want the local. But I also want a few comforts that I'm used to. But I don't want those things, the chains, to get so big that they crowd out the local.
Right. That's fair enough. Maybe we should do our next on location at Applebee's.
Yeah.
No, and one last thing about Applebee's. All right. If you're so small-minded that you think because they hang pictures of the local high school team on the wall that they're a local establishment, then you're an idiot.
Wait, why? Wait, what part is idiotic?
It's idiotic to think, oh, these guys, oh, they're local because they hung this picture up. They really care, and they might care. I don't know, but they're still, you know, Applebee's is everywhere. Right. So if you think that if you're buying into what they're selling as far as the claiming to be the local, what you're complaining about, Rob, then a person who does that doesn't have three brain cells to rub together.
Right. I'm saying it's obvious, but it's certainly the way it's marketed. You know, it's a little bit that's what's evil about it. It's like I'm trying to think of some chain, you know, or you know, a Walmart. So everybody knows what Walmart is, you know. I don't find them marketing too much to be any different than they are. They're a big old box store where you get stuff cheap. It's the way it is. But this is a chain restaurant that's using a national chain's marketing power to co-opt the local kitsch or the local traditions for their own like corporate gain. Like they're speaking like the local language, but all in a very market tested way. Which is,
I don't know that I see much difference from any other insurance companies do the same kind of thing.
Right. They
tug at the heartstrings, trying to get you to, oh, they really care. I'm going to sign up for their insurance.
Right. Or you could talk about, you know, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Well, you know, how are they able to be my neighbor if the neighbor is everywhere? It's just good marketing, but
I don't know. I'm not a fan of marketing in general. So I think the guerrilla marketing tactics modern day are highly irritating to me.
Yes. Well, this is a good example. And while I'm at it, to bring it back to the conservatives and liberals thing, it also comes down to this is a very liberal kind of thing with being a foodie, or if it is anyone known a real foodie, so watch out, they're out there. But I would go to restaurants and explore new ideas and new tastes, and so we would be sitting. I'd be sitting there with my liberal pals, and they would bring out the most exotic, goofy thing you've ever heard of. Mango spiced spinach pumpkin dip or something, you know, whatever it was. That sounds kind of good, actually. But they would, you know, just something completely outrageous would come out, and someone would try it, and the thing they would say about what they tried is they would say, "This is really good mango spice pumpkin dip," as if they've had like many different, you know, dishes. They have a very fine palate. I've had 100 dishes of this mango spice pumpkin dip. You know, no, you haven't. This is the first time. But what they meant to say was I enjoy this pumpkin dip. You know, but
you're gonna set me off.
That's the point.
They don't enjoy the dip. They don't enjoy the taste. They enjoy being that complete knob
who
is so special and refined that they can say
yes
that they like it.
Right.
That's all they enjoy.
Isn't that annoying as the heck?
It's those the individual toed shoes. It's everything like that.
Oh, you got something against the individual toed shoes?
Yeah, I've never met a person I liked who wore those shoes.
Fascinating. But you're right. You're right. And when I completely agree, and when I hear of conservative, you know, frustrations or anger about some of that stuff, that's what I think about. You know, and they're doing harm to the idea of tasting new foods, because what they should have said was, "Ooh, I kind of like this. I didn't think I'd like it. I can taste a little mango in here, and I didn't think they'd go together, but they kind of do. That's fine. Say all that." But, ooh, this is really good. Mango, spinach, you know, come on now.
All right.
Don't knock until you tried it.
So I wanted to mention a couple of stories that I had included links to in the show notes this week in the reading room. First of all, I guess Rand Paul came out and endorsed Mitt Romney this past week, which has got a lot of Ron Paul supporters upset. They think he's forsaken his father.
Yeah, what the hell is he doing?
Well, you have to read the article. They're basically saying that it's that he's positioning himself for something in the future
within
the party. You know, then there's a link in there to a story about a teacher in North Carolina who told one of her students that he would be arrested for disrespecting President Obama. And that one, there's a cell phone video from the class of her saying that too, which if you're interested in that sort of thing. On the Trayvon Martin saga, the latest development, I don't know if you guys heard this, that George Zimmerman's wife was arrested and accused of perjury.
Yeah, I saw that.
No, of what?
At one of his bail hearings, the judge asked about their family finances and whether or not they could afford bail, and she lied to the judge and said, "No, we don't have any money." But just a couple of days prior to that, she'd been on the phone with Zimmerman while he was in jail. And they had been discussing what they were going to do money-wise, and they were talking about moving money from one account to another. Anyway, I guess they didn't realize that all those phone conversations are recorded, and you know the transcripts are reviewed by prison personnel, and so lie basically that trying to hide their personal funds, and also like they've got a legal defense fund set up through PayPal that they've been taking donations, And there's over $100,000 in that fund, apparently. And they were trying to discount that as well.
These people are just idiots or what?
Yeah.
What?
I don't know. I don't know if that's going to have an impact on the overall case or not. But and then lastly, I've got a link there. I just added today a video, a YouTube video of a couple of high school students made. They went around interviewing their fellow students, asking them just random questions about U.S. history and geography. And it's really pitiful to watch. Most of the kids don't know, you know, simple stuff like name the countries that border the United States and who's the vice president. It's terrible. You have
awesome.
To believe it.
Where were these kids from?
I don't know what high school they were from. Hmm. They may have said in there somewhere. I wasn't really paying attention, but
yeah.
I don't know. It's just disturbing because, you know, you look at these kids, they're our future leaders, right? And, you know, or at very least, they're future voters, which, you know, is really scary.
Well, not to pat myself on the back or anything, but last week when I was talking about my prediction, the death spiral of society.
Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about. This feeds into it. There used to be shame in not knowing
right.
things like that. And now it's a big joke.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, you know, only a certain percentage of Americans will ever be geographers, so maybe it doesn't matter.
Oh, gee. Oh, gee.
Today.
That's good.
Yeah. Okay, so Nathan, since you're on the show here, have there been discussions that we've had that you have wanted to be a part of? And
oh yes, but yeah, I'm sorry, I just can't really think of any off the top of my head.
It's your big chance, man.
Oh man. Well, you know, it's a lot easier. We don't have the back and forth. You know, I can take pot shots. At you guys.
Right.
It's a lot easier.
Yeah, I think...
Yeah, so I'm not going to confront you, you know, face-to-face on the show.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. All right.
But, you know, I did have a kind of a question. I talked briefly just to Jerry, and I sent this link just a few minutes ago to Rob. There's this article about these swimmers in Australia. And apparently they were visiting, I think it was in California, somewhere in the United States. They were at a gun shop. They picked up a couple of guns, and they made this goofy pose, and they got a picture of it. And they put it on, I think it was Facebook. It's one of the social media, whatever. And so they got in trouble about it. The Australian Olympic Committee got involved. Swimming Australia got involved, which is apparently a governing body for, you know, swimming, which is a huge sport down in Australia. There's affiliations between it and the Australian Olympic Committee and such. They had to, in one of the articles I read, they were ordered to change travel plans, flying back from London or something like that. They had to remove the picture or pictures from their Facebook account, and now they've been banned from using social media for the entire duration of the Olympics. So I saw this article, and I was like, I don't really understand what is the big deal.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
And knowing Rob as I knew him, I was like, well, Rob can explain this. So I did a Google search for Huffington, you know, cite Huffington Post for this, and I sent Rob the link Huffington Post, so it speaks in the liberalese language, and I figured he could go ahead and then translate it for the rest of us.
Right, and it was a sanctioned news site, too.
Right, right.
You know, yeah, not one of the banished ones.
It wasn't a grudge.
Right, right.
Well, it was the only sanctioned site, I believe.
That's right. No, I don't get it. I mean, all I can think of is that we are sometimes surprised about our gun lust over here. Doesn't seem like lust to us, but to the other countries it does. You know, like if Michael Phelps was out there packing heat, you know, would it even register a blip here?
I think it would.
You think?
Yeah. Huh. You can't talk about guns in songs on the radio. They bleep out the word gun.
They do?
Yes.
Sing me a song and bleep out the word gun.
What was the one?
Oh, is this going to work?
What It's Like.
Oh. No, I don't know how it goes. How does it go?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember all the words, but he couldn't say Colt 45.
Oh, how about E.T., Extraterrestrial, the 25th anniversary edition release of that, where What's-His-Face is riding the bike and E.T.'s in the basket, and they fly over the cops. Apparently, right. in the DVD release, they edited out the guns out of the cops' hands.
Oh, yeah.
See,
yeah.
We've lost. We're already lost. And it surprises me these were Australian swimmers. That surprises me coming from Australia that people would be up in our no pun intended. People would be offended or there would be a problem with it coming from Australia. I always thought they were a little bit more relaxed about things.
They had a big gun ban in relatively recent history. But what makes it more interesting is apparently there's a bunch of hypocrisy because it was either the Australian Olympic Committee or Swimming Australia has organized shooting outings with the swimmers in the past. What? So the question came down to, okay, well, what was going on here? And somebody said, well, the problem is social media. Let's see, it says, the incident serves as a warning to all athletes about dangers of social media. I don't know. I just thought maybe Rob could give us an explanation, but Rob, you failed, and I'm going to hereby strip you of your liberal title.
No, I'm pro-gun.
Wow.
All right.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah, that is a weird one. Yeah, to me, I don't even know. Yeah, I feel just like you, Nathan. I don't even see what the big deal is.
I think we need to go back to not apologizing for everything and not kowtowing to this kind of pressure to, well, we think you may have offended somebody, so take this down and now issue an apology.
Yeah.
Because apologies are meaningless.
Right.
I don't know.
All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of another episode.
Yay. Wait, that's not what I meant.
So I want to thank all of our listeners and encourage you to get in touch with us. Give us your feedback. We'd love to hear from you. And we will bid you a fond farewell and see you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.
Goodbye. Yeah,